Okay, guys, we gotta put our trays up for takeoff.
Where's Dad?
Oh, he's in the back. We could only get three seats together.
Daddy has my pillow.
We'll get it later. Can you not put your feet up, please?
Why aren't we going?
We must be in line for takeoff.
Like security?
Well, that was a different line.
I have to go.
We just sat down.
But I have to go.
The seatbelt sign's on.
Why aren't we moving?
Hey, no kicking.
We're just 15th in line for takeoff.
Son of a...
Don't go there. Go on a real vacation. Go RVing. Learn more at GoRVing.com.
Suavemente, bésame, que quiero sentir tus labios besándome otra vez.
Suave,
bésame, bésame,
suave.
Hey, very good Monday afternoon here on 560 WQAM. Greg Likens alongside Ira Winterman filling in for Hawk and Crowder. We've got Alex Solano with us on the other side of the glass, of course, playing. This is the theme music you think of, right, Ira, when you and I come on the air?
You know, it's always been a salsa fiesta, yeah.
I knew you guys were both a huge Elvis Crespo fans, so I had to start it off.
Now,
right.
Now, what's the exact genre? Is this Tejano, or what's the genre here specifically?
I believe this is like a little salsa merengue.
Okay, all right. So I was close the first time.
Very yes. close.
As yeah. opposed to salsa merengue, it's salsa merengue.
That's, salsa merengue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Solana's always got all the pronunciations.
As long
down,
as we got the Ecuadorian sure. spin or Uruguayan spin. Excuse me, I'm so sorry. The Uruguayan spin, we're fine there.
Not funny, Ira.
I'm sorry.
Hey, we got a lot to get to over the next 4 hours as we fill in for Hawk and Crowder. As Ira, of course, got a big game last night in the NBA that we're going to start with. We've got a lot from the weekend that we're going to get mm-hmm. into, and certainly we've got some great guests coming up. Next segment, we're going to talk to Mark Jones, play-by-play man from ESPN, who also from Toronto, so he's got
Canadian background, Canadian roots.
Quite a connection to this series, so we're going to get his insight on everything. And then speaking of, no Canadian teams involved, but the Stanley Cup playoffs continue on. Game 4 tonight, you can hear right here on 560 WQAM, and Steve Goldstein is going to join us at 4 o'clock as he's working that series for Westwood One. Of course, accustomed to hearing him on the Panthers television broadcast. So we'll talk to both of them. And in the meantime, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can via the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line at 560-22. All right, Ira, first of all, how was your weekend? Are you surviving the heat? Because, man, I got out of the car today, and before I got in the car, summer is officially here.
Yeah, I was playing tennis with my son. We tried to get out early-ish at 10 a.m. He goes, Dad, it's 88 and feels like 95. And I said, it'll feel worse after 90 minutes of this, so we barely survived that. Yesterday, they promised it would rain all day. It didn't, so went out on the big 25-mile bike ride, so I got my sweat in now, and now I'm ready for a nice studio session in the air-conditioned studios here.
25-mile bike ride. Wow.
Yeah, just sort of vargling around. No great speed, just way too much time out there, yeah.
Gotcha, okay.
Just enough to get a hideous sunburn the first time out, yeah.
But that's good. You know you're going to spend 3 or 4 hours in front of the television watching the NBA Finals.
Yes.
So get the activity out of the way, and you can feel better about that. So let's start there. The Warriors
sure.
took Game 2 last night, 109-104, to even the series with the Raptors at one game apiece. Golden State has now won an incredible 23 straight road playoff games in a series. So if you go back, the last 23 series they've been in, they've won a road game. That's an NBA record. Thompson led the way with 25 points, but wasn't there at the end to see
yeah.
it. You had Steph Curry have a struggle in the first 20 minutes and then goes for 23 points. Draymond Green nearly with another triple-double. DeMarcus Cousins plays 28 minutes and was
Boogie.
Integral. And there's so many different elements of this to break down. But Ira, you just take a look at the flow of this game. Midway through the second quarter, it felt like, man, the Raptors are here to stay, and they look like they are in charge of this series. And then the tail end of the second quarter, you got to give the Warriors credit there, and certainly that 18-0 run to start the second half, which is a record since the merger in NBA Finals game, where you see the Warriors in really their signature fashion
sure.
take over and dominate this game.
I mean, what is it, 5 straight games now they've trailed at halftime. The Warriors simply are saying, give us a challenge. What's our challenge going to be? We'll recalibrate and go from there. And they did that, obviously, throughout the entire Portland series when they swept that. So at halftime, the game was already back to being a game. No one saw what was going to happen with that 18-0 at the start of the second quarter. And yet Toronto still showed the resilience to get back within 2 points and chipping away the entire time. My question to you, Greg, is this. When do the Warriors stop being the Warriors? We always talk about rooting for laundry, that the front of the jersey has the team's name and it doesn't matter the players. But when you take Durant out of the equation and you take Klay Thompson out of the equation and you start taking even Kevon Looney out of the equation, at what point does this sort of bravado of the Warriors turn a little bit into desperation? We'll find out more on MRIs today on Klay. We'll find out more on Kevon Looney. The one thing we know about NBA teams, not as bad as hockey, but they're never going to tell you the exact extent of anything anyway. And we still don't have a read on Kevin Durant other than Steve Kerr saying yesterday pregame, it might only be a single practice for KD before he comes back. They are traveling today. They are practicing tomorrow in the Bay Area. So I'm just curious, did they get closer to whole? Or at what point do you say to yourself, matter of fact, I'm gonna put this question to you this way. If the Golden State Warriors did not have Klay Thompson, did not, which they didn't, have Kevin Durant, did not have Kevon Looney against the Trailblazers, would that have been more of a series? Could the Blazers have won that series without those three?
I still don't think the Blazers would have won, but it would have been a better series, right?
I'm just saying at some point, I think that you whittle away enough Warriors. It's almost like a game show. It's like, oh, you're too good, so now this guy is out, you know, and he goes out a trapdoor, and there's no Kevin Durant to make the playoffs more fun. Now, all of a sudden, it's Klay Thompson, and I got to tell you, those kind of injuries, hamstrings, groins, things like that, those aren't just, oh, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's, oh, I'll be fine until I take one more step. And then I realize I can't. So even if Klay comes back out and plays game three on Wednesday at Oracle Arena, how much of Klay Thompson is he still going to be?
Yeah, it's a great question. And now it has become the biggest storyline, the injury situation for the Golden State Warriors. Hey, I want to get your take on this, Ira, because I'm a little cynical. I got to admit, I've been rooting against the Warriors just from a fan's perspective ever since Durant got there. And, you know, listen, I respect them, and certainly they've got a ton of talent, and he had every right to go wherever he wanted to.
Sure.
But I hear so many people in the aftermath of last night's game praising the Warriors for overcoming injuries, overcoming adversity. To a certain degree, I think that's warranted. And all this talk of championship culture and medal, the strength in numbers mantra that they live by, and Steph Curry talked about it, and Steve Kerr talked about it. But even with the injuries, the Golden State lineup, just to remind everybody, who was on the floor at the tail end of that game? Steph Curry, a two-time league MVP. Now, Sean Livingston, Quinn Cook, that combination, offense, defense, certainly that's not all that impressive.
And Sean Livingston is still one of the great resilience stories in the history of the NBA from that horrific knee injury over a decade ago with the Clippers.
Yes, so take nothing away from him. But then Andre Iguodala, who is a former All-Star and a Finals MVP, Draymond Green, who's a three-time All-Star and, you know, one of the best defensive players and all-around players in the league. And then DeMarcus Cousins, four-time NBA All-Star. He's like a season removed and an injury removed from putting up monster numbers in New Orleans and over the course of his career. So even without Durant and Looney and Thompson, certainly, they had four current or former All-Stars on the court in crunch time. And I know they only scored that three-pointer over the final five and a half minutes of the game.
Right.
But Ira, like, I have to give them a little bit of credit, but I ask you this. Is it really that impressive when you consider even the Warriors, when they're down a few All-Stars, still have an abundance of All-Stars when compared to the rest of the league?
And yet that was probably the best five-man group they have left, because there is nothing left on this bench unless you're a big Jonas Jerebko fan from Sweden or something like that. So I get that. But still, when you look at the group you just gave me of who you'd want to take a shot at the end of the game, I know Andre Iguodala has made big shots. We've seen that already, sort of in the Portland series, but he has been struggling with the shot lately. We know Draymond Green has been off of the shot almost the entire season. Mm-hmm. Sean Livingston, very limited mid-range player, and that's about it anyway. And DeMarcus Cousins probably was on his last breath playing more minutes than anyone expected. So basically, the Raptors had the right approach. Anyone but Steph Curry and will live with it. They just wound up getting this wide open shot. So yes, they still have a quality of talent on the floor, but I don't know how much more they can survive and persevere with that quality. The group you just gave me, for example, if that's going to start game three, then I would, except for the venue, and obviously Oracle matters, I would ride with the Raptors simply because of depth of talent and what they'd have. So I think the injury reports are going to be huge. I just get this sneaking suspicion. There is no way that Kevin Durant's going to let a finals go by without getting back on the court.
And at least giving it a shot.
Yes.
Right?
And being something. If he's not going to be the dynamic pull-up player with the jab step, he still can be a guy who, like Iguodala, For example, let's say Kevin Durant could only spot up or something like that. I would have felt really good if that was Kevin Durant instead of Andre Iguodala. So at least if Durant could be that, it gives them a little bit more. But you know what? If the NBA wanted drama, they can't get any more storylines than they have right now.
Certainly, right? I mean, we're all waiting and waiting in these days off in between games to hear the latest injury report or media availability from Steve Kerr and the status update that he's going to provide. So I think it is compelling in that regard. But here's the other thing that went through my mind last night, Ira, as I'm watching the end of that game. And again, within the context of, you make a very good point about the depth. And over the course of a 48-minute game, you know, that can catch up to you. But as far as individual talent, the Warriors still have a lot of top-end talent. And the thought crossed my mind last night when people are like, oh man, they're going through a drought. And I'm monitoring Twitter a little bit, and you hear the broadcasters on ABC as the Warriors are trying to fend off that last push by the Raptors. And I'm thinking, man, the list of guys I just named, how many of those guys would instantly be put on the Miami Heat and they'd be the best player on the team?
Or one of the best players.
Right?
Obviously, Andre Iguodala toward the tail end of his career, but you're absolutely right. With a guy like Draymond Green, Boogie Cousins is going to spark all kinds of debate now. It's almost like Boogie Cousins has this now, like, seven-game tryout period to show anyone of what he still is. I don't think he gets nearly the money he would have before the injury with the Pelicans and the Achilles, so he might be more another of a one-year deal kind of guy. But man, he looked awfully good for a guy pulled out of dry dock and a guy who hadn't played so long. You could see his innate basketball skills. His passing ability is off the charts the way he sees it. And when you play him with Draymond, you have two fantastic playmakers. Then the question becomes a question I never thought I'd ask about the Warriors. Do they have enough shooters? And that's when they went to the box and won. Toronto said, we're going to let anyone else shoot. We're going to pack four in the box, foot in the paint for everyone. We're going to put Fred VanVleet full time no matter where Steph Curry goes. Could someone else outshoot us? So if Durant doesn't play game three, if Klay Thompson doesn't play game three, you're really talking about Quinn Cook as your second best shooting possibility out there for the Warriors. Man, that's a big change from Splash Brothers, isn't it?
Big change. And so then it was like the question we were asking after game one about the Raptors supporting cast. And, you know, if you're Steve Kerr, it's like, can they do that consistently? Can Siakam and Marcus Saul and Van Vliet and, you know, even Kyle Lowry, if you want to throw him into that mix, can they consistently be the guys that come through and make shots if they're going to double team Kawhi Leonard? And we saw in game two, they cannot do that consistently. Van Vliet still had a good game, but Siakam was different. Marcus Saul certainly was a shell of himself. And so, and Lowry, man, two games in a row now, he's been subpar. And then
how many dumb fouls is that guy going to commit? That reach in on Boogie Cousins when you know it's such an all or nothing play that 90% of the time you're not going to rip this steal. You're going to wind up getting the guy's arms anyway. Everyone is watching the ball, so they're watching the foul there. That to me is a mind, whatever you want to call it, but you've got to be smarter in that moment. So again, I don't want to sound condescending, but you have to be good and you have to be smart. There's been some real stupid play there by Kyle Lowry. I think he'd agree with that.
Certainly. And that was, you know, right at the top of the list. So Ira, the question now becomes, I think we kind of shift this question from the Raptors supporting cast to your point, depending on the injury status, and everything is in flux right now, but now we've got the focus on the Warriors supporting cast. So can Quinn Cook or Alphonso McKinney come off the bench and be a reliable shooter for him?
And that's the thing, Greg. Think about the Heat four NBA finalists and even what LeBron did. The Heat always were able to get A-list supporting players. Shane Battier came aboard. Ray Allen came aboard. Birdman came aboard. There were always other pieces. That's what I find so curious about the Warriors. We always hear this, how players are ring chasing, how they want to jump on, they want to have a chance to get the ring. When did it get to the point for the Warriors, like you said, where it's Quinn Cook, you know, a former G League guy, where it's Alphonso McKinney last year was with the Raptors G League team, where it's Jonas Jerebko on his 19th NBA team? That's what I don't understand. If the Warriors are the be-all, end-all, and they're your best ticket to a championship, like for David West and players like that, I'm really surprised when you look at it. I know they're without Durant. They're down in numbers. You wouldn't see some of these other guys. Boogie was out for an extended period, start of the season, the playoffs. But I'm curious how a team like Golden State can attract more quality B-list players that they've gotten themselves in this position. Because look at LeBron. He leaves the Heat. One of the first moves he makes, he brings Mike Miller. He brings James Johnson. He brings Birdman, however briefly that was. He always had guys to push guys further down the rotation to the point at the end where the Cavaliers said, and it was a mistake, we don't even have room for Dwayne Wade. Where they called him at the trading deadline was in 2018, and they basically said, look, Heat, do you want him back? Dwayne, you're not going to play anymore. They didn't have room for him. I mean, this season's Dwayne Wade, the Warriors would embrace. The Raptors probably would embrace. That's what I'm surprised about the Warriors, this notion that everyone wants to play for a championship team, and if you're going to play for the minimum anyway, why not go there? And then I look at the Warriors bench, and to me, it's staggering that to have a chance to annually go to the NBA Finals, that more veterans of quality aren't there on the bench.
Yeah, it's a good point. At the same time, you know, I have a hard time feeling bad for the Warriors at this juncture. You know, that's kind of like the cost of doing business if you're going to get Kevin Durant to surprise everybody and come in free agency a few years ago, right? So you got all these star players are getting all the big bucks, and then, you know, the bench is going to suffer, and you take those odds, right?
If you could be the kind of bench guy like especially Mike Miller was, where you might not play at all, and then you'll have a moment, your shoe will come off, you hit a gazillion three-pointers, and your life will change forever. That's why I know you said you like Toronto and the underdog. I'm sort of rooting for Golden State for this reason. I love off-season chaos. I want to be on your show on two different stations all the time, free agency, what's going on, because let's face it, if Toronto loses, what's going to happen with Kawhi becomes a much greater question. If the Warriors can win without Durant, well, we don't need the bum, which I don't agree with any of that, but that becomes a question. I think for chaos' sake, for free agency's sake, if the Warriors win without Durant, I think it opens up to anyone going anywhere.
You're very right, and that's going to make this offseason be terrific. I want to follow up on that a little bit later on as far as the different scenarios that could take place with Kevin Durant specifically, and with the idea that the Warriors, you know, hypothetically could be the first team if they finish off this series, mm-hmm. going into the summer, be the first team since the Celtics in the 60s to be eligible for a four-peat, right? Going for four in a row. So I think that's an intriguing scenario as well. We can talk about that more in a little bit, because we're going to talk to Mark Jones when we come back from ESPN and get his perspective on everything NBA, especially with the NBA Finals as it's now shifting from Toronto to Golden State. We got a lot more to get to, just getting started here on 560 WQAM. Stay tuned.
Radio.com.
Welcome back here to 560 WQAM. A very good Monday to everybody. Greg Likens alongside Ira Winterman filling in for Hawk and Crowder. Hope everybody is doing well. Big game last night in the NBA Finals as the Warriors even the series at one apiece thanks to a 109-104 victory in Toronto. For more on that, we're going to go out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. As all guests appear there, you can buy now and save big during the grand reopening of the all-new Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. And it is great that we have a chance to welcome in Mark Jones, play-by-play broadcaster from ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter at MarkJonesESPN. Mark, thank you very much for joining the show. How are you doing today?
Good, man. Series got a little bit more interesting yesterday with the Warriors stealing one there in Toronto.
Certainly.
When it looked like they were leaking a little bit of oil down the stretch.
It did, and Ira and I have been talking about it, but what did you think overall? We'll talk more specifics. What did you think overall about how last night's game played out?
I think the Warriors basically were the team they've been for most of the playoffs. That game one performance was a team that had been off for 9-10 days, and the rust was falling off by the second. So I think they basically got back to who they are, what their identity is, the fact that they had 34 assists on 38 made field goals and assisted on every single basket, all 22 in the second half, really epitomizes who they are more so than game one.
Mark, when we look at the Warriors, I'm just wondering if we're sort of looking at the Warriors more as laundry in the logo than who the players are. My question is, how much can the Warriors continue losing to attrition and still be the Warriors? We don't know about KD, but it doesn't look very likely for Game 3. Kayvon Looney, it seems like his injury is getting worse by the moment. It went from chest now to shoulder, maybe collarbone. And obviously, you know, with a groin or a hamstring like Klay has, even if he says he's playing, it just takes one quick motion or burst and he's out. At what point does attrition make the Warriors less than the Warriors?
Yeah, they're getting close, Ira. I think their margin is definitely a lot slimmer than it traditionally is with the injuries to the guys that you mentioned, not to mention the fact even that Boogie Cousins extended himself minutes-wise mm-hmm. yesterday. You know, Iguodala's hurt, too. That's another guy who's kind of limping around out there, and he makes the big shot. I think what it comes down to is you know, if they've got Steph out there, they're going to have a chance. He's the one guy that you have to have out there. And as you know, he was dehydrated last night. If he's out there, I think they're all they need is like they what they showed in the third quarter. The Warriors play a game where they can just run up and down for, you know, 39 out of the 48 minutes, or they can run up and down, go through the motions for like 42 out of the 48 minutes, but all they have to do is put together 1 5- or 6-minute spurt in a basketball game and then play you even after that, because that one spurt that they play, and Steph is usually out there for it, is so devastating that teams rarely recover from that. And that was the case yesterday in that 18-0 run that they had on the Raptors yesterday to start the third quarter. So as long as they can do that, they don't need, I think, the full complement of healthy guys. If they've got Steph out there, if they've got a somewhat healthy Klay Thompson, a somewhat healthy Iguodala. I mean, look at even Andrew Bogut comes off the bench yesterday and gives them 6 points in 7 minutes, mm-hmm. just at the right time. Their timing of their spurts is really what is holding them together right now. And I think it's built for the long game. They'll be able to withstand Toronto that way.
Well, and that's the other side of the equation. And getting beyond the fandom, I know Greg wants to ask you about that and everything going on in Canada from that perspective. The Raptors themselves, and you had a bunch of their games. It seems like every time I want to buy into the Raptors, Kyle Lowry's committing a stupid foul. Their offense goes a 5-minute stretch without anything. Kawhi looks like he's on his last breath. Marc Gasol goes from great to just a guy. Serge Ibaka goes from just a guy to nobody. Fred VanVleet might be hitting shots, but the rest of the other guys aren't. Marc, should I be sold on the Raptors as anything particularly special as an Eastern Conference champion? Like, what are they?
Yeah, I'm with you, Ira. It's hard for me to buy into a team who's really their second best player, Pascal Siakam, mm-hmm. goes 5 for 18 yesterday after careering in game one. Marc Gasol was invisible yesterday, totally outplayed by Boogie Cousins. It wasn't even close. A guy who hadn't played in 6 weeks. And then Lowry, I'll give Kyle Lowry this. If he doesn't score, he only had 13 last night, mm-hmm. he's still making good basketball plays, better for worse. Last night was, I think, more of a deviation than the norm for him in terms of that sixth foul, which was a real dumb one, and a couple of other plays. But he makes really invaluable effort plays. And I don't think that Fred VanVleet is going to continue to trend the way that he's trending right now. I mean, you know, shooting the ball and scoring as well as he had, especially in a timely matter. It's hard for me to believe that the Raptors can go into Oracle and win a couple of games at this point of the series.
Marc Jones, play-by-play broadcaster from ESPN, joining us here on 560 WQAM, talking about last night's NBA Finals win for the Warriors to even the series at one game apiece. Marc, you already referenced the 18-0 run to start the second half for Golden State. What would you point to, if you can, as to why the Warriors are so consistently dominant in the third quarter, especially during this postseason run?
You know what? I think Steve Kerr is one of the best in the business, one of the top three coaches in the league. I think that he presses the right buttons. Last night, starting Boogie Cousins in place of Jordan Bell. I think that they have that championship medal and experience, which kind of senses when other teams can be vulnerable. And that's what happened to the Raptors yesterday. You know, that comeback by the Warriors actually started at the end of the second quarter. They got that little run at the end of the period, which cut the lead to 5, and they kept going. And they didn't stop until it was a double-digit lead. They have still one of the more explosive lineups in the NBA. When you look at, you know, they got Steph, they got Klay. Boogie was out there doing his thing. A very underrated passer, you know, dropped some great dimes yesterday. And Iguodala makes timely shots and plays. And defensively, they locked down. They had the Raptors go 0-for-8, I think it was, in that stretch during that 18-0 run. Iguodala and Draymond Green both got into Kawhi Leonard and totally neutralized him. They only have to do it, like I said, for 5 or 6 minutes at the start of the third quarter, and then they're working with a comfortable margin the rest of the way.
It's amazing. They can do it so well, and you make some good points there. Hey, Marc, I know you have ties to the Toronto area, so you know what does being in the NBA Finals mean to the city, to the community, and even the country of Canada?
I think it's fantastic. I think that when you look at the history of basketball in Canada and more specifically Toronto, where I grew up, there's always been an abundance of talent in the Southern Ontario, Toronto metropolitan area, about 3 million, 3.2 million people. I think this growth, Greg and Ira, is actually late. It's late in coming, and I'll tell you why. I used to work in the media up in Toronto and work at one of the sports stations up there. And every time I tried to say, hey, guys, this is like the late 80s, early 90s, like more late 80s, like 87 through 90 before I left and joined ESPN and ABC, I would be fighting with my assignment editors up there. I'd be saying, hey, listen, guys, there's this Lakers-Celtics game. It's a big deal to basketball people in the city who watch NBA. And I would always get beaten down. They'd be like, oh, Jonesy, nobody cares. Nobody's watching. They would lead with NHL or curling or Formula One or tennis, anything but the NBA. And I think had the media been a little bit more tolerant of the sport, a little bit more open-minded of the popularity of the sport worldwide, you would have seen this movement in Canada and Toronto happen a decade ago. Isaiah Thomas went in there, was great in terms of promoting the sport, and met the same kind of resistance amongst the older demographic, the more traditional demographic that was resistant to what the NBA looked like, what it felt like. They never gave it a chance, but basketball is finally winning out, rightly so, up there, and I'm happy to see it.
Mark Jones, play-by-play broadcaster from ESPN, joining us here on 560 WQAM.
Mark, I'm curious. I want to stay on that track for one reason. One of my favorite trips in the NBA used to be is I go up to Portland, then I go to Seattle, then I go to Vancouver, two of the best cities to visit, especially on the NBA tour. Do you ever think there's a chance that Vancouver can get back in the game, that when Adam Silver shows up with Obama last night and you realize it's more than just a game, it's almost a movement in Canada right now? And I know the nation has its one team. They do have, you know, obviously baseball, it didn't work out as well in Montreal. Could you see a second team in Canada? Or do you think the concentration will just be that, you know, Toronto is Canada's team and that's where it is?
You know what, Ira, that's a great question. And I'm like you, man. I used to love doing that Portland, Seattle, Vancouver Grizzlies triple dip up there in the Northwest. It's a tricky demographic and dynamic, and I'll tell you why. Toronto is as American, quote-unquote, more American, quote-unquote, than any other city, in my estimation, in Canada. You don't have the American influence in Edmonton. You don't have that influence in British Columbia. You don't have the same influence in many of the other Canadian cities. And it's because when you look at the proximity of Canada to the American border, you know, it's a 90-minute, you know, hour, 15-minute drive from Toronto to Buffalo, New York.
Right.
All the TV and radio stations, music-wise, culturally, are influenced by, you know, the CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox affiliates in Buffalo. I grew up watching Van Miller. I don't know that Vancouver or any other Canadian city has that predominant, prevailing American influence where, you know, kids who grow up in Toronto, we grew up like we were basketball people. We were not... we weren't hockey guys. A lot of us were not hockey guys.
Right.
We weren't talking Maple Leafs. We're talking about Bob McAdoo and Ernie DiGregorio and Randy Smith. We weren't about that. So Toronto is very unique in that sense. I can't speak to Vancouver now like that. In 2019, they might have a better chance. But Toronto has so many wonderful ethnic groups that come from all over the world that support basketball, support the Raptors, and you see, I'll tell you this one story, okay?
Sure.
When I grew up in Toronto, it was more important in high school basketball to be voted all-city than it was all-Canadian.
Really?
Okay?
Wow.
Because the concentration of talent, we could have taken a team of basketball players from Toronto. I'm talking about Simeon Mars, my brother, myself, a bunch of guys like that who would have beaten the national team back in the day.
Wow. Wow. Well, that gives you all the perspective you need right there. Mark, since we don't get to see you now for a while, for people who don't know, Mark takes a break with the league crew taking over the finals, comes back for Summer League. In between, while I'm trying to do free agency in the draft, Mark is sending me postcard pictures from all over Italy, and for that, I will forever hate you, but you deserve your time. My question to you, Mark, is this, and you and Hubie always have been so much about the game, which I've always appreciated, but we know free agency overwhelms this sport. Maybe like no other sport. The next time we see you, you're going to be in Summer League in Vegas during the heat of free agency, just about that signing period, which runs concurrently. From what you know, from what you've gleaned, from the inside information from your brother who handles radio play-by-play for the Raptors, Kawhi Leonard, do you think, number one, this series impacts his decision? Where do you think he winds up?
Yeah, I think his mind is made up. I think he's leaving for the Clippers.
Wow.
The Clippers have had scouted virtually every one of his games this year, whether it be on the road or at home. I think that whether he leaves, I don't think it matters whether he leaves now, because he's taken them further than that franchise has ever gone. And even against the backdrop of a one-year rental, this experiment with Kawhi has still been a success. I mean, you play really year to year. It's almost like the Pat Riley philosophy. We're not into building. Let's be into winning now. And the Raptors are taking their shot now. And I don't think you can find fault with Masai Ujiri having his team 1-1 in the NBA Finals right now, even if Kawhi Leonard leaves, because they'll start over if he leaves, and they'll try and get back there again. But at least they can say they've been there now. They've gotten there, and that was the goal.
Mark Jones, play-by-play broadcaster for ESPN, joining us here on 560 WQAM. Mark, with that in mind, you still have a lot of the series to go, but from the Raptors' perspective, do you think they should feel confident that the Warriors are banged up and we're interested to know about the injury status, or would you be discouraged if you're them that they couldn't take advantage of that opportunity last night?
I think we're going to look back at Game 2, and the Raptors are going to see an opportunity when the series is over that slipped away, in a game that they should have won, with Clay hurt, with Looney out, with Durant not on the floor. They'll look back at that as an opportunity lost. And I think that Golden State wins this series in six. I'm going to stick to my initial prediction. I think they get home, they get just healthy enough. And, you know, I don't know that the Raptors role players like Fred VanVleet and some of their other guys off the bench, Norman Powell's been dynamite in the playoffs. I don't think they can duplicate what they've done at home in Oracle Arena, where the Warriors actually haven't played in a long time. So I think this comes back to Toronto with the Warriors leading 3-1, and they win it in six.
And then, Mark, just to get back to the point I was asking also about free agency, does that trouble you at all that it overtakes the game, and maybe even during the draft, people talking about free agency, and then during Summer League, people talking about free agency? Or as someone who's ridden this ride for so long, even when you work with old school Hubie Brown, do you sort of appreciate that that's just where the game is right now and that people are on to the next thing?
Yeah, you know what, Ira? It becomes a little bit of a distraction at times, but you know, everybody's talked about it year round. The players kind of blow up on you once in a while if you ask too much about it, like Kyrie Irving did this year. Kawhi did a great job of dismissing it and not letting it be an issue right from the start. I think it's what makes the NBA as popular as it is right now. It has turned into 24-hour-a-day reality TV. And, you know, the speculation about Kawhi, about Kyrie, about Durant, about Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris, Klay Thompson. You can fill programming, which is what we all do, by just speculating about who's going to come back.
Sure.
And it makes for good theater. You know, I had one of the assistant coaches this year, a Western Conference coach, told me, "Mark, what is it about this league now? We're all actors. I feel like we're all actors."
Yes.
and to an extent, he's right. You know, we're actors in a big stage play, and that's part of the reason why it's a multi-billion-dollar business right now. So I don't want to kill the golden goose. I love it.
And since we know
I'll feed that, the monster when I have to.
And since we know, probably since you gave your comment on Kawhi, Bleacher Report now has ESPN reporter says he knows where Kawhi is going. Let me take it a step further, Jonesy. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. Since you know all, see all, where do you think those two are going, Durant and Kyrie?
I think Durant is definitely going to New York next year.
Definitely.
I think only because the factor that the Knicks know that he's either coming or have some kind of tacit agreement, wink, wink, because they let Porzingis, and, you know, I know some of the dynamics behind Porzingis leaving. It happened so quick, it's almost like they wanted him to leave, knowing that KD was going to come.
They had his replacement.
I mean, his security card was done before he left the building after saying that he didn't want to be there. He didn't give him a chance to even give them a list of teams that he wanted to go to.
Right.
He was gone. So Kyrie, I'm not so sure about. I could see Kyrie going to New York as well. You know, there's been some speculation about him going to Brooklyn. But, you know, they've already got, you know, they got D'Angelo Russell to deal with there.
Right.
They re-signed Dinwiddie on a deal during the course of the season. So I think New York gets at least one. I think New York's going to be a big winner in free agency.
Right.
I think Philadelphia's going to be a big winner in free agency. Yeah, I really do. I just got a sneaky feeling that, you know, you look what Elton Brand did during the regular season, being able to engineer those deals with Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris. He's got a good feel for what's going on there, and they're not that far away. I think they're just they had to get some scars this year.
Right.
And next year, I think they let those scars work for them.
If Jimmy Butler stays in Philly, who does LeBron get? Does LeBron get anyone, or do you think the dysfunction there leaves them with the hodgepodge like they had this year with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Rondo and Beasley and JaVale McGee? Who joins LeBron as his 1A?
Yeah, I think ultimately, I don't know whether it's sooner or later, I really think Anthony Davis is going to end up there. I know David Griffin, the new general manager of the Pelicans, is talking about, you know, him staying and building around him with Drew Holiday and Zion Williamson. But Anthony Davis and his representation, Rich Paul, are still bent on him going to the Los Angeles Lakers. And I just don't think there's any way of stopping it. They can be as stubborn as they want, but, you know, I don't think at the end of the day they're going to cut off their nose despite their face.
Well, Jonesy, the only thing better than predictions is when someone immediately leaves the country so you can't be tracked down. So I appreciate the time. The next time I will see Jonesy will be in Vegas. And folks, if you've never seen Jonesy in his Elvis outfit at the buffet, it's like nothing you want to miss. So make sure you're out there starting July 5th.
I'll be there all week. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Hey, Mark, thank you so much for joining us, and enjoy watching the rest of the NBA Finals, all right?
Thanks, Mark.
You got it, guys. Ira, Greg, talk to you later.
Thank you.
All right, there he is, Mark Jones, play-by-play broadcaster from ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter, at Mark Jones ESPN, and quite the predictions there. He seemed very confident.
I'm done. I'm writing my next 4 weeks worth of stories as soon as I'm done now.
We figured out all the NBA's issues as far as free agency are concerned. Just ask Mark Jones. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be back right after this.
Radio.com.
A very good Monday afternoon, everybody. Greg Likens alongside Ira Winterman filling in for Hawk and Crowder. Hope everybody's doing well. Alex Solano with us as well. I got to ask Solano a question here, Ira, because this was his big birthday weekend. So he survived. I was a little worried, Ira, that, you know, I heard him talking off the air, like kind of in, you know, back channel conversations around the station on Friday, that he was going to go all out to celebrate his birthday this weekend. So I was a little concerned that the celebration may go overboard and we might not actually see him. But he's a professional. He's here. How'd everything go, Solana?
It was a good weekend. I'm still a little shocked that I'm 25 years old. I just feel really old. I feel very, very old. Like, my knees hurt. Every day since I turned 25, I've woken up with like a new pain in my body. But the weekend was good. It was an awesome weekend. I spent it at the beach. It was awesome.
It's a good weekend to be at the beach if you can stand the heat, right?
Yeah, it was hot as bleep.
You got a little sunburn. I could see that.
Yeah, I don't get tan. I'm too white to get tan. I just get burnt.
Was the seaweed as bad as people said? I heard that seaweed is. My son went with his girlfriend the other day, and I read in the Bahamas, actually in the Caribbean now, it's just a geological kind of thing or whatever, geothermal, whatever, that it's actually 10 feet high on some islands in the Bahamas and in the Caribbean on the beach. But I know here, it's sort of a regular problem every now and then, but you literally almost at points can't get from the sand to the water with literally climbing through, like, you know, the mangrove there almost, right?
It was weird because typically, like, if you go to Key Biscayne, I was in Miami Beach, like around 50th, right? If you go to Key Biscayne Beach, there's a lot of seaweed. When you step into the water, you feel the seaweed.
Right.
You're kind of like pushing things out of the way. It's kind of disgusting. In Miami Beach, I've never seen this before. The first, I'd say, like 10 yards of water, very shallow water, were just brown and murky. But when you walked through it, you weren't stepping in seaweed. The water was just brown and murky.
See, that's too much information.
Yeah, it was disgusting. But
so
then
what was
once,
going on down
once
there?
You, I have no idea. And like, I went, I was at the beach all weekend. I went the first day, like, at around 50th, the second day around 30th. So, like, this spanned all across from, like, South Beach to pretty much North Miami Beach. Like, once you pass those first 10 yards of water, it was as beautiful blue as you could possibly imagine. It was, like, typical South Beach, Miami Beach. But for some reason, those first 10 yards, Ira, it was disgusting. But there was no seaweed in the water. So it was really, really, really weird.
And then my other beach thing, and I know you can't say something. I mean, I know just like you would never say someone whether, you know, they were overweight or what you thought they looked like. But when you see the tourists there and you see them turning beet red, I mean, beyond beet red, almost purple. And we all know how dangerous it is. I mean, we all live with sunscreen here. We're Floridians. We know that. Solana, when you see that, do you almost feel like going up to someone and like telling them they're frying, or is it sort of a tourist caveat emptor? If you don't know any better, so be it.
Well, yeah, but the problem is I'm like the whitest guy at the beach anyway.
Right.
So like,
you're the ghost.
I can't be the guy going up to people like, hey, make sure you have sunscreen on. They're gonna be like, oh, what about you, whitey? Like, I'm literally the whitest guy at the beach, so I can't do that. I can't be that guy.
It's just crazy when I see people come down here and fry, and then you're out in the evening or something like that, and you could see like people who didn't turn over.
Yes.
So they're walking at you and they're fine, they're walking away, and it's like, oh yeah, they have no idea what's going on over there.
I like the idea of somebody getting mad that you're trying to help them out and calling you whitey.
Yeah. I mean, like, all my family are pretty much, they're more tan than I am. For some reason, I ended up being really white. I don't tan. All my family calls me, like, every time we go out, like, leche, which is milk in Spanish. Like, they just have everybody's funny and funny guy out there. So I'm constantly being called like the whitest guy ever.
Okay. Well, I'm just happy you showed up to work today. I'm glad that the celebration.
Complaining about the aches and pains at 25.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm telling you, Ira. Like, my back today. Ugh.
I was trying to ignore that a little bit because you're really laying it on thick there.
My knees, I can't even bend my knees today. I'm getting old, guys. 25. I'm getting old.
Over the hill.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a lot more hills after that,
yeah,
Solana.
Yeah. You know what? You may just need to see a doctor if you've got those issues. I mean, because that seems a bit extreme. Hey, Ira, we're getting a bunch of texts rolling in here. Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota. Text line 56022 is how you reach the show. 56022. One of our texters is asking you a question. In the grand scope of things, what would be a bigger impact for the NBA? A Warriors three-peat or a team from outside the United States winning a championship?
It's crazy, Greg, because I know you follow probably things like the television ratings, and it's been so odd, and this is one of the lowest rated series in decades because you don't have a Toronto market in the U.S. market. So I think a super team that everyone loves to root against still brings people together, even in opposition. Everyone hates the Yankees, but they want to root against them in as many series as possible. The Cowboys, the same thing. I think every sport needs that one team that can be a national focus when every other team falls by the wayside. I think it's fascinating this year because even if the Warriors hold together, they might break apart anyway, almost naturally, with the whole Kevin Durant thing, whether you see him as a factor or not. I think the NBA, first of all, doesn't root because, again, to say they're rooting is to say there's frozen envelopes in the lottery and it just opens everything up. But I think the NBA wouldn't mind seeing the Warriors succeed because, as the people who follow the Raptors have said, the Raptors have already sort of hit their success level. There's no turning back now. Toronto is not going to turn into a meek, nonsense franchise without Jurassic Park. They're established. They're going to be established anyway. I would probably go more for the Warriors winning being better for the league. And again, like I said, from my perspective, I think the chaos it creates with Kevin Durant leaving, with Kawhi Leonard and that undecidedness, I think that's what keeps this league fresh. Is that as much as fans want to have players stay in place, you know, we could talk about the old back in my day kind of thing, a player never left, there was no free agency, things like that. I think it makes it really fun. And I think even Adam Silver, you know, he acknowledged that also, that, hey, the reason that our league does so well is people are talking about it 12 months a year. The reason the NFL, which has a ton of free agency, does so well, people talk about it 12 months a year. I think these are the sports that get it, that realize, hey, people want to be part of the personnel game. My team might stink, but I could still come up with reasons why it'll get better in a hurry.
Now, the international aspect of this, I do find to be an interesting conversation, Ira, because it's very apparent to everybody that Toronto is in another country, but the Raptors to me, like, because my future in-laws were giving me a hard time. They're big basketball fans, and they're like, hey, who are you rooting for? They've been rooting for the Warriors. I think they just like to root for winners.
Sure.
But I was like, no, I'm rooting against the Warriors every series. So, of course, against Houston, they were talking trash to me because, you know, that didn't last very long. Didn't last at all against the Trailblazers. So this time around, I'm like, no, I'm rooting for the Toronto Raptors. And they're like, oh, but that's not the American team. And I'm thinking, I've never really put it in that perspective. Yes, they're in another country, right, but it's all in an American league.
And it's American players for the most part.
Yes.
I know they have Serge Ibaka and Pascal Siakam and Marcus Gasol, but I mean, the league's become such a melting pot anyway that I don't look at that as Canada's team, because any player on one of my teams could be traded there or playing there at any time. So I don't take that perspective as us against them, because honestly, it's not fair. There's 29 of us. There's one of them, you know, so you look at it that way. I love to see a fan base rewarded, and I love to see a fan base handle it with class and dignity, which all but one Toronto fan has handled it that way. So when I look at it, look, my wife's favorite part of watching the games is seeing Jurassic Park. The fact that, and this was amazing, it showed the first guy online for last night's game was online at 12:50 a.m. So let's put that in perspective. He is standing online to get into a place where he can stand and watch an entire game. You're probably talking, that guy was on his feet for almost 24 hours. That kind of passion, I don't care if it's Toronto, I don't care if it's Oklahoma City, I don't care if it's Memphis in a small market, I think that's to be lauded. I think what the Raptors are showing us more than anything, more than from the basketball standpoint, is this: what it's like to be a great and loyal fan. And that's why I'm enjoying their enjoyment.
I'm with you. Yeah, it's really fun, and it brings you in, and it makes you root for the city of Toronto. All those fans are so loyal. You can tell it means, it's very significant.
And I want
to
get to you later on the show, and I want to ask you about this because my wife asked me about this, and we could talk about this later. Could Miami ever be like that? Could there ever be a Jurassic Park in Miami? I don't know what you call it, Heatstroke Center or something like that. But I wonder if our fans, or are we just too worldly with too much other stuff to do? And of course, the weather also. But would fans here ever gather and stand out there 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 strong?
Yeah, I mean, you'd probably have to tell them, you know, that you'd lie to them and tell them that, you know, the time that it opens up and all that stuff is much earlier than it actually is to try and actually
get them there on time for the game. Right, another story.
But, we can talk about that a little bit later. I can see Solana doing that for Heat games if he wants to sell one of his season tickets.
And the good thing is we
know,
and he won't sunburn out there, so it won't be a problem.
Exactly, yeah, there you go. Hey, Ira, we got a lot to get into coming up in this 3 o'clock hour. Coming up next, we're going to set the scene for what could be an awkward but very important week for the Miami Dolphins. We'll get to that next here on QAM.
Okay, guys, we got to put our trays up for takeoff.
Where's Dad?
Oh, he's in the back. We could only get 3 seats together.
Daddy has my pillow.
We'll get it later. Can you not put your feet up, please?
Why aren't we going?
We must be in line for takeoff.
Like security?
Well, that was a different line.
I have to go.
We just sat down.
But I have to go.
The seatbelt sign's on.
Why aren't we moving?
Hey, no picking.
We're just 15th in line for takeoff.
Son of a...
Don't go there. Go on a real vacation. Go RVing. Learn more at GoRVing.com.